Hello and welcome to This Week in Quality. This is episode 112. I am Judy Mosley, this week's co-host, along with, well, Ben, do you want to introduce yourself at all?
Hello. You may remember me from previous episodes. My name is Ben Doan, the full snack tester, and it's great to join you this week, Judy.
Excellent. Yes, we are so excited to be here. Welcome everyone who's with us today. And also, if you are joining later in the when the podcast is published, we are so excited that you are with us. This is a Ministry of Testing event, so don't say or type anything you will regret. We do follow the code of conduct, and that will be available in the chat shortly. My brain is freezing a little bit. So Ben, was there anything that you noticed this week in testing?
Ooh, what a great question. So we do have a shout out in this. So first of all, big shout out for episode 112. I don't know which HP response code that is, so people will have to tell us in the chat. But big congrats to Priti Gupta for landing a new role as a test automation lead at Barclays.
That's so awesome. That's so exciting. New jobs are the best.
Yes. Shout out to anyone who we don't have written down on our list, but have recently landed a new job. It's a tough market out there, so congratulations all around for anyone successfully landing jobs at the moment.
Absolutely. We will be inviting people on stage in a bit, but I know this week, Ben, we're talking about quality engineering, correct?
Absolutely. So, quality engineering, a common theme here on This Week in Testing and in the Motiverse in general. One thing we do have is a bunch of questions from the quality engineering conversations. I can be corrected from backstage if I've got this wrong, but I believe they're part of the leading quality and the conversations going on in the club. Yes. So we can have a little bit of chat about those. But before we do, I'd love to have a very little chat with you, Judy, about snacking and software testing, if you don't mind.
Oh, I am at home with food, so I'm ready for this.
Absolutely. So one thing we were just having a little bit of a chat about backstage, and I hope this is going to be feel relevant to the rest of the audience, is how internationally, so for those of you who don't know, so I'm here based in the UK, and Judy, remind me, where about in the world are you?
Yes, I'm in Kentucky in the United States.
Very cool. So sometimes the very same things are called entirely different things between the US and the UK. So for example, one really great one that's come up recently is biscuits. So yes. To me, biscuits are very much hard cookies. As you might describe them, they're sweet and come in many different glorious varieties. But correct me if I'm wrong, Judy, a biscuit in the US is something you'd have with gravy, and the gravy you have it with isn't even what I would recognize as gravy either.
Exactly. Yes. So there is a fabulous restaurant in Kentucky called Biscuit Belly, and it has nothing to do with cookies. It is a white, fluffy flour biscuit that is more salty. I would say almost bland, but not exactly. Mm. And then it's covered with a white peppery milk gravy. And I have it for my birthday because it's one of my favorite meals. But yeah, it's completely different than the biscuits that you experience where you are.
Absolutely. I love this idea how things can be the same but different. I think it translates very well into the software the software industry and the tech industry, because we often use very similar terms but mean very different things. I think leading is quality engineering. Quality engineering is one of those where I think that in different parts of the world, in different cultures, but also just in different companies, we use that word quality engineering. And I know that every time we give a description of it, there will be someone in the audience who's chomping at the bit going, that's not my definition of quality engineering. That's not how I mean it to be, mm-hmm. and it will be different. And I think that that's completely valid, mm-hmm. but it's one of those things, as always, where context makes such a difference.
Yeah, because your experience and my experience are very real and they're very tangible. And we could even bring those things to each other and let the other person experience it. But yeah, it can't just be a difference of opinion. So clearly defining those things are incredibly crucial.
Absolutely. So anyway, that's how I relate snacks to quality engineering. So that starts us off. Shall we? And I can see we've already got a couple of people keen on coming up on stage. So we'll get you up on stage just in a little bit. Before we do that, shall we start with a couple of these quality engineering questions and answers? So if I ask you one of these questions, maybe you can start discussing it and we can maybe get some responses in the chat before we give the answer that the person who originally posted this gave. So let me do this one. I'm going to jump down the list a little bit. Natalia Brumi identifies a challenge in implementing quality engineering where teams lack a shared understanding of its purpose. Mm-hmm. This feels very relevant. What is that challenge called?
I know for myself, and I may be confessing my sins this morning, but I have not listened to Leading with Quality yet. So even though I do have a cheat sheet, I'm not going to give an answer. But I do know that, like, when you're trying to implement quality engineering and helping a team understand its purpose, yeah, it's so difficult. And I think for me, the better teams are the ones that have been through the fire and they've heard that quality engineering can be helpful for them. So yeah, but having a name for it is really helpful. I don't know if anyone's said anything in the chat. I'm looking right now.
Let's have a look. So we've got Alexander says, lack of common ground on software testing. Richard Adams said, oh, okay, so this is more about the biscuits. I felt the nice biscuits aim higher than nice. Yeah, but I don't think it's nice. I think it's more like nice. I don't know. We'll get into that. That'll be a good one to do the history of. I don't think it's nice as in nice. I think it's nice. I think it means something. They're talking about custard creams. Okay, people haven't moved on much from the snacks. That's,
no.
I love that. So I'm going to give the answer for now. We can move on to the next thing or get to one stage. So the way it's been described here is a lack of unified vision. And I think that's fair. I think it's fair, but I also think that there's way more to talk about that kind of teams not having a shared understanding of. So I think there's two things, right? There's the team not having an understanding of their own purpose, and then there's mm-hmm. a team not having an understanding of a purpose of quality engineering. And I think both of them can cause some really big problems.
Yeah. Well, if you don't have a shared vision, you don't really know how to get there. And yeah, it's a struggle.
Absolutely.
And you don't know how to picture it either. Like what makes good enough and how do we achieve that?
Exactly. If you don't know what good looks like or what the end looks like, then it's really hard to know if you've got that or if you've even made progress towards it.
Exactly.
All right. Do you want to have one more of these, or shall we bring some beautiful folks on stage? I can see that Scott and Adi are both queuing up.
Yeah, I think bringing people on stage would be good. They seem ready to go.
So I know that Scott and Adi are good friends. So Simon, perhaps you could bring both Scott and Adi on together and see if they've got something they want to talk to us about together.
I can't have anything on my own, can I?
Like Julian's and others, I've never met that man in my life.
Okay. I've got two things, Ben. You can pick One was an existential crisis I had this week, and one was a really nice thought exercise I did with some learners. What would you want?
I'm all for an existential crisis on a Friday, Scott. Go for it.
I had a meeting with a high-profile client, and I described myself as a test leader and test leadership, and the client challenged me and said, "You don't even test. How can you call yourself a leader?" And I went, well, and I looked back and I thought, actually, I haven't actually physically done a project involving testing for a couple of years. I've done obviously bits, but I'm now in the academic space. So it's, yeah, it gave me a bit of an existential crisis of how would you describe a test leader?
That is fascinating. I love that one. Judy, do you have any experience of the wonderful world of test leadership or getting to a point where you're not doing enough day-to-day testing?
Well, Scott, I actually have a clarifying question if you're okay with it.
Yeah, please.
When they said that, was tone is everything. And so were they saying it as almost like a check? Are you a leader? Or was it more confrontational? Do you like what? How did you receive it?
The client in question,
yeah,
their tone can change every other minute. It's one of our largest clients as well, so we've got to behave. Oh. It was more of a, I'm writing some new material to entice curiosity in testing because they want more just engineers and shifting left. And I went, no, get towards the customer, think, live, enjoy. So I think it was more of a check, like a condescending, well, how can you, why are you doing this? What makes you so special? Because I no longer have my bright fluorescent pink and blue hair. It's coming back, don't worry, Ben. Yeah, it really put me on my back foot. And I felt like I had to almost justify. And it's been a very long time since I've had to justify.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I would say, I am still very much like all levels of testing. So I don't have an experience necessarily where someone has checked me like that. But I think I have been in situations where I've had to speak. We had a, going back, this will all tie in, but going back to the idea of definitions and having to explain your thought process and your experience to someone at a different level. I was in a meeting with a contractor, and their definition of done was that the development team had finished it, and now it was in QA. But in my mind, definition of done was after it had been QA'd, sent back the whole, before release. And being in that meeting, and that was quite a few years ago. And yeah, I was absolutely shaking, and I'm pretty sure my voice was shaking, but being able to clearly describe my experience and outlining the benefits. And I think that's maybe that springs back into that you do, while you may not be testing now or you haven't tested in a while, you have experience. Well, and you have something to offer.
To bring this full circle for you, it does end with actually a really good note. And it was, there was about 12 of us in this meeting. And two other people in that meeting who work for the client as well said, I've seen Scott talk at X conference. One of them was in Test Bash. Oh, sorry, Moticon. Sorry. Freudian slip. Sorry.
Wait real quick. So we'll take the community start off of Scott for that one. Penalty.
Yeah, that's it. So somebody said, actually, I watched Scott talk at Moticon. So other people in the room, I wouldn't say validated me, but I just said, oh, no, you can't say that to a tester or a human being. So it was really nice. And it made me think that's what I would do in that situation. As if someone never checked Ben, I'd be like, do you know who this fella is? And I'd explain, oh, I know Ben from here. And I think as a community of testers, we need to call that out a bit. I think someone put in the chat about once a tester, always a tester. I'm like, yeah. Once you've got that sort of mindset of tinkering and understanding, it never really leaves you.
Yeah, I've got
a tool testing, but I'm not.
Yeah, I've got a town.
Go for 80.
I went through something really similar, but when I moved to EasyJet as a quality engineering architect, I took a step back from testing. And it was, that architect/quality coach role that I was doing, I wasn't doing the hands-on testing on a regular basis that I was doing. And it took a while to build up. I think it was maybe 6-8 months. But I always got into I'm not doing testing, but I'm telling people the things that they should be thinking about with testing. And I'm still writing articles about testing. So I went through, I wouldn't say it was a full-on existential crisis, but I did suffer a sort of, lack of confidence. Which it felt in a very weird space to be in. It was like, it wasn't even transitional. Because I hit the ground running as an architect, because I've done a lot of training, test theory, and talking about the application and how to identify good alteration and how to think about quality characteristics early on in the process. So I was doing stuff I was familiar with, but I just wasn't doing the getting my hands dirty with the testing and getting things, manipulating it and trying stuff. And it just went through a weird period. And then it all ended badly. So, and then when it all ended badly and I burnt out, and now I'm working independently and doing my own thing, still not really testing stuff. I'm doing a little bit here and there. I'm playing around with stuff. I still do my free assessments of like charity websites and stuff and give it feedback on how they can improve accessibility, little bits like that. But I'm not really getting my hands on. I'm more in the creating content and overseeing like certificate creation and those sorts of things. So yeah, I'm a long time, I've not been directly challenged in the way Scott was, and I can understand that. I would put you on the back foot. But yeah, it's one of these situations where I think if you're not doing the hands-on, I think it's like people who first move into management, and it's that transitional phase between the hands-on person to the organising the hands-on. And it's that, well, I want to be hands-on, and it's like whether you first become a manager or you first become in charge of people, you have to resist the urge to go, come here, let me show you, and let me do it for you, and all this sort of stuff. You have to resist that urge. And I think it might be in a similar vein or affected a similar way. I don't know. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I think it is a weird one. I think this person, I think someone put it in the chat, I think they checked me because they'd had a bad experience before of someone who was they class themselves as a leader, but they're only a leader because they've been in the job forever, rather than actually nurturing, supporting, helping, teaching, that kind of thing of individual testers. And that's what I currently love. And that's why I'm in that space. But yeah, it knocked me back, and I'm not normally one who gets knocked back. I can normally just let stuff fly. I'm quite happily just go, yeah, it don't matter. Nothing bothers me. But for some reason, this really bothered me this week, because I've been speaking to a lot of junior testers or testers under 1 year who were struggling with the point of they have to become engineers. That's the current taste out there. You have to be an engineer. And they were struggling because that's not what their love is. So I think had that at the back of my mind, I was speaking to a couple of learners who were not loving the time at the moment. And then I got checked all at once. But hey, oh, Simon, trust me, if there's one thing I've got, it's more of a reflection on myself to say, well, am I a leader? I think I am. I've spoken at Motiverse a few times, so I hope so. Unless you...
Stop.
But they do let any sort of rabble on the stage, because Aidy's been on there as well, so it's fine.
Thank you very much for sharing, Scott. I hope we can all help you find your mojo again. Maybe bringing back the hair is what will help.
I also agree, Ben. And I think 2026, I have some really cool stuff lined up in the teaching and learning space for software testing. I'm not going to talk about it on here, because ESTEC is the way to go. ESTEC all the way. But yeah, it's going to be so much fun.
Well, I will leave you with one thing, and then I'm going to see if Aidy has something more to say other than his contributions to your fine self. And that is, if you have been a tester and you have been a leader, just because you're currently working doing something else, is there a point where you ever stop being this thing that you are? Or is it just that you collect these things across your career, and it's just the lens that you currently look at what you're doing? And if in the context of speaking to this client, you wanted to give them the lens of being a tester, a leader in testing, that's not for them to question that. Maybe there literally is for them to question that, but you don't need to take their validation on it. You have that lens on yourself, and that's completely valid. So own it, my friend.
Cheers, buddy. Thank you for letting me rant, everybody. I appreciate it.
Well, feel free to stay on stage and heckle. You're a complete stranger here, AD Smoke. So, AD, how's your week in quality been? Is there another thing entirely separate from Scott that you wanted to bring up?
There is. My week has been an absolute nightmare because my aunt, who I care for, who has intellectual disability and severe learning difficulties, she fell down and broke her hip, bless her. So she's on a hip replacement. She's in hospital and she's having a terrible time. She's not enjoying it. She's refusing her food and medicine and stuff and been running back and forth to the hospital. So my week has been an absolute nightmare. But the one little shining light that's been keeping me going is not the fact that I don't care what anybody calls me, engineers, all these other words. I will forever be a tester. First and foremost, I'm forever. But the thing that's kept my light on is that we've mentioned STED, Software Testing Essential Certificate, which is awesome, by the way. It's the most comprehensive learning for testers you can ever have. Even experienced people will learn from it. So that's the plug for that bit done. But SQEC is coming, the Software Quality Engineering Certificate. And at the moment, there's a lot of activity going on with this. Lessons are being wrote, chats and conversations are being booked in, and the first couple of modules are coming together nicely. So one of the things I wanted to come on stage to do was on behalf of Sarah Deary, and I've forwarded this to the This Week in Quality Slack channel, is we would like to hear from the Motiverse. We would like to the Motiverse to audio answer questions. And the first question up there is, what do quality engineers do? And there's five little notes for you to read before you answer the questions. So it's introduce yourself by sharing your name and your current role and how long you've worked in quality-related roles in the industry. Walk us through a recent day at work. What did you focus on and why? Does your work change across the week, depending on what's happening? Does your Monday ever look different from a Friday? Well, everybody's Friday looks differently because we're just waiting for the weekend and for it to come round, obviously. Nobody works that hard on a Friday, unless there's a release, and then it's all stressful. And tell us about a time when your context changed and your work changed with it. And the last one is, we've heard that the role is broad, varied, and very context-dependent to be a quality engineer. What's one tip you'll give someone new to quality engineering about choosing what to focus on when there are many things they could be doing? So you don't have to answer all the questions in the list. You can just do one or two. You can do the introduction and tell us about your day, or you can do an introduction and tell us a top tip. So it's over to the Motiverse. So I'm just highlighting that for Sarah and let you know the great news that the Quality Engineering Certificate is well on its way, and the first module should be released next week, if not the week after. So it's very close to getting off the ground and running. Questions?
I'm very sorry to hear about your relative there, but very grateful for the news and sharing about STEC and SQEC and the audio recording. So thank you very much for sharing there, AD. Questions.
She's sent a club worker, so not in the flushes of youth, but yeah, she's an absolutely lovely lady, and it's so depressing to see her stuck in hospital being sad that she just wants to go home, and she would have probably been home by now, but she picked up a chest infection while she was in there, so they've had to jump around to my office to get that bit sorted out. But all her equipment's come home, is being delivered on Monday. So I'm hoping on Tuesday or Wednesday she'll be back for when I can get her all settled in. Then she'll be happy and she'll start eating properly and it'll take a lot of weight off me.
And hoping for some Ruth Red. Yeah, back to square. Yeah. Big love. Big love is right. You've got some love in the chat there as well. Let me refocus us for a moment back to the quality. So I feel like I have a question here that's a bit relevant to something Scott was saying earlier on, and something you've just said with the question. So it's not quite the same as one of the questions you've just mentioned there for SQEC, but it's similar. So this one is from Stuart Thomas, and it's, what is the key difference What is the key difference between testing and quality engineering in their scope?
Like every single question he tested.
I knew it was going to work. Here we go.
No,
Context depending, because you can be the best quality engineer and not write a line of code or create any automation. It might. I don't think it's necessary for all engineers to be able to write code. I believe that all companies want to have four roles rolled up into one, a quality engineer, and save themselves a quarter, save themselves 75% of the money that they should pay out for different experts in different areas. And I think that's one of the challenges that us as a quality community need to take on, of explaining what quality engineers can do at different stages within their development, but that not all quality engineers are going to be the same kind of quality engineer. And we're going to have different areas where we are more competent in it. And like me and Scott were talking about in our generalist talk at Motocon, if you want to be retro or test bash, I believe both are still valid because we've had many test bashes, and the test bash will always have a special place in my heart, no matter what it's called. But I think as a community, we have a responsibility to not define what quality engineering is, but explain all the things it could be. I think there are many types of quality engineers, and I think there are many types of software testers. I think there are many types of developers. And trying to shove people into one box with one name doesn't help us. It doesn't help software development. And to do that with any sort of group of people never works, because a group of people who have one thing in common are not all the same people and don't do all the same things. And it's exactly the same with lots of job roles. There are lots of designers, and there are lots of different types of designers, and so on.
Ben, would you like a straight answer?
So,
Love your really big KD.
You love it. Go for it, Scott.
So I've just, thank you, Simon, for putting it in the chat so I can read it on this one. Now, I deal with a lot of clients who want engineers. So our program's called Software Quality Engineer. We named it that a year ago. We've not stole it. And one of the things I see of what's the expectations of testers is, if you think about the STLC as a big freaky circle, engineering is very much in the build test area only. They're very specialized helping build, the pair coding, the TDD, writing automation scripts. So it's what we would previously call an automation engineer or automation tester. It's evolving into that software quality engineer role. Well, I think, there's a spectrum. On the very opposite end is your analyst, which is very close to your design and your maintain observe side of the STLC circle. If you think of, like it was Lisa Crispin's like infinity DevOps symbol with test everywhere picture, it's very much of the test engineer people want, or the software test engineer people want, are very much SDETs. So it's the software developer in test, TDD, coding first, doing as you're told. Where I think the other side of it, the testing side, is actually the quality side. It's thinking about testing as a holistic approach from all the angles, about processes and entry, exit. How can we make this better? Does it taste right? Does it feel right? That's how I see it.
Keep breathing.
I'm wrong on many occasions.
Thank you for that one, Scott. What I love is that you've got some very different points of view. And there's actually some very different points of view in the chat as well. Before I read them out, Judy, I'd love it if you have any follow-up on this while I'm reading the chat, and then I'll read it out.
Yeah, I think to AD's point, I think back on my career, and while I've held the title of QA engineer for some time now, like it's been a few years, my roles have been vastly different. And I think it goes back to context and the needs of the business. So the way that I'm operating in the current role that I am is, I'm actually thinking of like my first automation role that I had, and I owned quality, but also the team was so small. Like there was a leader, an engineering leader, two devs, and myself. And so I had to bring it on every level versus the role I'm in now. I'm in, it's not a huge organization, but it's much larger. And everyone owns quality. I don't really even need to try to persuade anyone to own the quality in the organization, because they're just like, well, yeah, like we need to test and we need other people to test. And yeah, it's very different in context. It means a lot. So
thank you for sharing that, Judy. That's really cool. So I'm going to read a couple of comments from the chat and then I'll see if AD has anything to come back on that one. So Simon says, as part of SQEC, we've been working on a model and diagram to help explain core approaches of quality engineering. Rich Adams says a few different things that So Rich was saying that Dan Ashby did a diagram, but it's been used in various books and blogs, that infinity test cycle stuff. And then Gary Hawk says, whenever we talk about terminology, it depends who we are trying to influence. Like it or not, we can convince ourselves as much as we like, but that doesn't mean that it's an instant understanding everywhere else. That's a really good point. Natalia Brumay says, just a thought on how the role is changing. I think now at the moment, I'm not doing quality lead role, but a quality ops role. It depends much on the current type of work I do. And now it's a lot with DevOps practices, less designers and ideation requirements, etc. Let's see what else we've got. Adam says, from what I've seen, quality engineer has become a bit of a catch-all for anything related to quality and testing. I know that Callum Akers Ryan has been speaking and blogging and throwing things out onto LinkedIn about that and about how we should be worried that quality engineering isn't being used as a catch-all for anything about testing. What else we got? Rich Adams says, agree completely on code. For me, a QE is beyond the testing, regardless of whether we're talking about automation or manual, or what I enjoy, a hybrid. So I think that was agreeing with one of your points, AD, and disagreeing with your point, Scott. I love this topic. It's the fundamental important thing, and it gets a lot of disagreement amongst ourselves, which is fascinating. AD, did you have a follow-up before I share my more opinions and then we move on?
Yeah, if Scott really wants the simple, short, dull answer, I can do that for him. I think the difference in scope between testing and quality engineering is that a tester is focused on the product in front of them primarily, but can have an influence in other areas. And a quality engineer is focused on the system, not necessarily just the product in front of them, including the ways of working and everything else, and looking at continuous quality, building a quality culture, those sides of things, and bringing everybody along on the quality journey. So I think in terms of scope, for me, if I'm making it really simplistic, and it isn't simplistic, there's a lot of nuance to this, but in the most simplistic terms, is that a tester can influence the product in front of them, and a quality engineer can influence the culture and the ways of working and the systems and the methodologies around them, and influence them towards, like you said, a continuous quality or quality as a culture, depending on how you describe it.
Oh, I love that.
I don't think answer.
To try and summarize what you're saying, AD, that is that the tester is concerned with the software system that is being delivered, and the quality engineer is interested in the system which surround the creation of that software system.
Yeah, the system that's being delivered, and the quality engineer is interested in the delivery system.
Yeah. Ooh, that's interesting. So
I might have to write that down.
Yeah, you should definitely write that down. And thankfully, this is being recorded as a podcast. So the one thing I wanted to add, which is that I've been having some great conversations with Callum and a few others this week on a similar thing, is, and this may sound controversial, it doesn't matter, and I know this is in a very deliberately hot response way, it doesn't matter what we define quality engineering as, Sometimes it matters a lot, but it doesn't matter because there is no one definition that is useful. There are probably two or three really core things where there is a common difference. But for the most part, in the same way that tester is a very broad term, and actually testing on a different team or in a different company or just on a different project needs different skills and experience and different people to approach it. In my experience, having worked as a quality engineer in a group with other very skilled and senior quality engineers, myself and the other quality engineers were very different people doing very different jobs with the same role title, but every different team we worked on were needed different things. And we had different skills and experience to bring to those teams. So we approached it differently. And some of us looked very much like people who were testing the system in front of us and helping get the release out the door. And some of us looked very much like people who were influencing the system that created the system in order to try and have that meta quality and working on improving the SDLC and working on all those kind of higher level things. So let me give you the answer that Stuart Thomas wrote, and you can see if you agree with this. He said, testing is about execution, whereas quality engineering is about strategy.
Yeah, that's that ballpark of what I was talking about.
Scott, how much does any of that wind you up? Did you want to return to that?
I think it's the opposite. I think test engineering is about engineering and stuff like that is about the here and now. Where testing is testing the everything.
So I'm going to throw something out there, and I think that part of the challenge is that there was a existing role that's existed for a very long time that's often interchangeably called test engineer, A engineer, or software development engineer in test.
Yeah, SDET,
which is pretty much a software development role that focuses on automated checks and tests, right?
So,
and that role already exists, and in some cases, people are now asking for that same skill set and that same role, but calling it quality engineer.
Massively agree.
And that, I can tell that's true for some full section of the market.
I could tell you that's true for about 50% of the market. The reason I say that is I get 80% of the students per year come through the program I look after. And out of all the clients we speak to, a lot of those clients are governments, big banks, very large organizations. And they all say SDET. That's what it doesn't exist. SDET is something you learn through. You do one and then become it. That's what they want. They want that role that's existed for years in a junior. And so then they're saying, okay, well, let's just put the word engineering. That's what they're trying to get to. That's their end goal, which is why I push back quite a lot, because those SDET roles were earning crazy mega money. You know what I mean? But they're now wanting that skill set for nothing. It's devaluing a lot of these wonderful new learners that are coming through.
Yeah, so there's that. And I think that's a real problem. And this is something that I know Callum's been calling out as something we should be worried about as an industry, because calling all of those existing SDET roles quality engineer is a real problem for the whole of the industry, because quality engineering is that, or rather can be, and it's something that is strongly held by a number of people, that strategic side, that full system side, that we're going to build tools and processes to influence how quality is built, how software is built, how the whole product is developed. And it has that leadership element, and it has that coaching element, and it has that strategic element. And sometimes it also has an automation element. Sometimes it does not. Sometimes it also has a hands-on testing element. Sometimes it does not. But the core is the leadership, the coaching, the strategy, of the principles of the quality engineering principles. But it's a really big challenge we have at the moment in as the full industry, because we need to figure out a way to educate the industry that you can't just take the fact that you want an SDET who can do all the things, call them a quality engineer, pay them half as much and get unicorns for cheap, it ain't going to happen.
I've got that's something that reminded me of, because I had this conversation this week, I think it was Tuesday, with someone. And that's what it's a bit sideways from what we're talking about. Am I okay to sidebar you, Ben, or do you want to finish?
No, go ahead. I've
got three skills: curiosity, resilience, and expertise on one tool. Rank them in order of best or most to least of testers. Resilience, curiosity, and expertise on one tool. Sorry, mate.
I don't know what you're asking me to do, but that's
what, so, for instance, what do you think is the most important out of those three? What do you think is the least important? What do you think is the middle? You have to 1, 2, 3 them.
I would say that none of them are always the most important thing.
You're not getting away with that, Ben. You've got to rank them. You're not getting away with that. You're doing an AD answer. Come on.
I love from Judy as well.
I have a different thing that I think is more important.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so if I'm going to take your question at face value, I would rank curiosity as number one, resilience as, well, don't make me choose between curiosity and resilience. But no, I'll go for it. Okay, curiosity is one, resilience is two, and expertise. That was the third one. Okay, yes, because I feel like curiosity to me is the savior. To me, it in any situation in life, it's when I'm not curious that I miss out. But when I'm curious, I always benefit from the experience. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with Judy's answer. I was going to give the same answer for the reason that the tool will change or become redundant or get replaced. So expertise on a tool is a fleeting skill, where the other two, curiosity for me, drives a continuous learning attitude. You're continuously learning about things, so you're going to continuously improve and improve your skills and improve what you're looking at and come up with different ways to test it. And resilience is like coping with testing is dead for reasons every 10 years. The winds are blowing differently, so testers are getting the blame this week for something that's absolutely nothing to do with testers.
What was your thing, Ben? Because you didn't give an answer.
He's right. Number one.
So I definitely agree with Judy that I would put both curiosity and resilience above expertise in a specific tool. Like that's fair. Within taking it for face value. My other thing was to do with collaboration and communication. So I think the biggest way, and this is really a quality engineering thing, it's not a tester thing. It can be a tester thing, but it is a quality engineering thing. So I really think that the single most important way to influence the system that helps you build the system is by increasing the team working, the collaboration, the pairing. I think that makes more of a long-term fundamental difference than expertise in a tool. Curiosity and resilience are really important. That just is true.
I asked this to a group of senior people, lecturers, and the people who understood testing all argued about curiosity or resilience. The tool was always at the bottom.
Yes.
I then spoke to other groups, so data scientists, or doctors and PhD weirdos, they actually had the tool higher.
That doesn't surprise me.
So different groups of people actually had it slightly different. So yeah.
So I'm going to give you a few answers from the chat, if you don't mind, because I think there's been some interesting things said. Simon Tome says curiosity all the way. Alexander Knopf says curiosity is the thing that drives the others. Then we've got Simon says, curiosity builds resilience and resilience builds expertise, which I love.
I've stole that.
Yeah, keeping that, that's brilliant.
Yep.
Then we've got expertise is a tool. Expertise in a tool can be substituted by AI up to a point. Yeah, fair. That's the bit that's getting commoditized. A tool can be learnt. and tools. So this is from Michael. Tool can be learned and tools will change. Curiosity will build resilience. I would therefore go for curiosity, then resilience, then finally a tool. Gary Hawkes says, I think ambition is Ooh. Top of the list for me. Ooh, that's an interesting one. I like mixing it up there, Gary. And Rich Adams says, I've been doing research on education and software engineering. Interesting difference between tools and soft skill priorities.
I'll come in there from what Richard said. I'm in the education space for software engineering, and I've rewritten our 18-month program and removed all the tools. You no longer learn a tool with me, to the detriment of a lot of providers.
Nice. Yeah.
Because
how much do you get wound up, Scott? Sorry to interrupt you. How much do you get wound up when a job for a quality person, whether that's tester, QE, SDET, whatever, is listed, and the first thing that's listed about it is the programming language?
Yep. So Java, it basically, it'll have Java, it'll say Java, Postman, TDD. In capital letters, the first line.
Yep.
It's, no.
Yeah. Always a red flag that puts me off applying for those jobs. Well, thank you very much, Scott and AD. You've helped us talk about a lot of different topics, very related to the core of quality engineering. I think that it's really interesting how diverse an answer we can get from the very one question. I am going to be greedy and finish with the last thing that I was going to say, which is that following up from what I was saying earlier about how it doesn't matter, what I really mean is not that it doesn't matter, but that having one single role description that covers all of what quality engineering isn't useful for either employers or job seekers within the area of quality engineering. And instead, we should focus on a common language for people to be able to describe the problems that they have that they want to bring people in to help solve, and the different things that they need people to come in and do and achieve and fix and move forward. And from a job description and an employer point of view, and we need to help individuals who are job seeking to describe the skills and experience and impact that they want to have in a way that helps employers understand whether they're a good fit for the job. But the problem is, there is no one singular job that is tester, and there is no one singular job that is quality engineer. And I think this conversation proves that very quickly. So what we need is not one better description of quality engineering or quality engineering. We need a better way to have those conversations with employers for them to describe better how the work, what is needed, and a better way to help people describe what their skill set is and what they will offer to employers.
I know we only have a couple minutes left, but I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I'm wondering if part of it is communicating who we are and what we do, and letting people decide if their definition of quality engineering and our definition of quality engineering match. I'm only thinking of that just because, like, the personality tests, like the different personality tests, and we're always dying to find out who we are, and we want a test to tell us. But it, for me, years ago, I was just like, you know what? I don't care what some personality test is going to tell me. I'm just going to do things and see what happens. But then also, I think being able to communicate, I still need to be able to communicate the type, who I am and what I can do. And I'm also wondering, I'm thinking about my LinkedIn page, which I'm not saying we should focus on LinkedIn, but I'm saying, like, how do we sufficiently describe who we are, what we do, and maybe use the term of quality engineer, but then someone can look at that and say, oh, that's not what I want at all, or, oh, that's exactly what I want. yeah, I don't know.
I think you've absolutely hit it on the head there, Judy. It's about how do we use our public persona? How do we use our portfolio, our CV, our LinkedIn in order to sell ourselves and describe the things that we have achieved and the things we do and the things we've done and how we describe the things we want to do and want to achieve and will do and can do in terms of the expertise you have, the resilience that you have and why that matters in a way that is attractive to employers. And the problem is the more honest you are about that, probably the narrower you're going to get in terms of who it is that will want you for those things. But then when you land the right job, it's going to be a really good fit. And that might be true as well for the other way around. The more that we help employers use the right language to describe what it is they really need, maybe the less people will apply for those jobs, but the people that apply for them are actually going to be a good fit for the job. So at the end of the day, why all these descriptions matter, as far as I understand it, is for two things. One is so that that we can get matched up with jobs, right, from both the employer and the employer's point of view. Then once you're in a company, you then need to have that conversation of how do we actually have the conversations with our teams within the company, the different engineers that we work with, the different roles that we work with, so that shared language, that shared communication can be used in a healthy and positive way to bring about useful change. And it feels like there's a whole nother podcast and a whole nother talk or blog or anything that could go just into that topic. So I'm going to say happy Friday and I'm going to leave you there and let you give us a bit of an outro, Judy. Thank you so much for letting me rant and ramble as part of this conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Any last minute thoughts, Scott or AD?
Thank you and have a good weekend.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for the great chat in the audience chat. There's been some really great stuff in there. Very good.
Excellent. Thank you so much, everyone. This is episode 112 and happy Friday and have a good weekend and we'll see you next time in This Week in Quality. See ya.